Chapter 8. Heyday, the bioweapons industrial complex at full production. While the 1925 Geneva Protocol banned first use of bioweapons in war, it did nothing to prohibit their development and stockpiling for defense, deterrence, or retaliation. By 1969, the Pentagon was spending $300 million a year manufacturing chemical and biological weapons and delivery systems. The Pentagon routed much of this funding through pharmaceutical and chemical companies, defense contractors, and universities with computer systems that could solve the complex meteorological and biochemical challenges of dispersing germs and gases by air. CBW scientists from Germany, Japan, and the U.S. labored at Fort Detrick and other top-secret laboratories, proving grounds at 6 military bases, more than 70 university campuses, and many private and nonprofit corporations devising ways to weaponize pathogens, gases, herbicides, pesticides, snake, spider, and sea urchin venom, defoliants, and an array of odorless, colorless nerve gases, distilled mustard gas, blister agents, lethal asphyxiators, and incapacitating and riot control agents. Fort Detrick's life scientists, quote-unquote, were experimenting with 160 biological agents, including infectious diseases like tularemia, rabbit fever, Q fever, viral equine encephalitis, pisticosis, pneumonic plague, pulmonary anthrax, biologically engineered anthrax, pneumonic plague, and brucellosis bacteria, as well as virulent fungi, rusts, blights, and rots weaponized to destroy food crops. CI operatives at Fort Detrick were also cranking out innovative new gadgetry for dispersing weaponized pathogens, including aerosol and powder dispensers and sophisticated projectiles capable of overcoming the barriers that had thwarted Shiro Ishii's failed efforts to deploy biobombs in battlefield settings. As biological agents were grown in liquid, water amounted to roughly 75% of their cellular substance. Therefore, America's venturesome germ warfare scientists put Herculean effort into developing techniques for freeze-drying biologicals so as to stuff as many killer germs into canisters, bombs, shells, and missiles as possible. Attacking food production is a persistent preoccupation of germ warfare enthusiasts. One reporter described the facilities at Fort Detrick in 1959 as including, quote, laboratories for mass breeding of pathogenic microorganisms and greenhouses for investigating crop pathogens and various chemicals that harm or destroy plants, end quote. By 1966, resourceful U.S. researchers had succeeded in freeze-drying a rogue's gallery of devilish microbes, including bacteria such as plague, anthrax, parasites such as Q fever and Rocky Mountain spotted fever, viruses including yellow fever and encephalomyelitis, and anti-crop fungal diseases like rice blast and potato blight. Freeze-dried bacteria, supersonic warheads, and synthetic biology. As the Vietnam War intensified, the Pentagon and intelligence agencies ramped up bioweapons research. The Pentagon tasked defense contractor Litton Industries Incorporated, now Northrop Grumman, to ensure supersonic delivery of dry biological agents by developing methods for disseminating microorganisms from supersonic vehicles. By 1964, both the Army and Navy deployed biological warheads for the smaller missiles. By March 1967, Fort Detrick scientists had developed a technique for delivering a biological warhead by the giant Sargent missile, which was already carrying chemical payloads. Outside the Army and the Central Intelligence Agency, several other organizations and commands played roles in the program. The Office of the Surgeon General activated its biological branch in 1950, allegedly for the purpose of biological warfare defense. The Navy, the Air Force, the Public Health Service, the Department of Agriculture, and the National Academy of Sciences were also deeply involved in the escalating bioweapons arms race. The many chefs in the biowarfare kitchen, cooked up ferments of homicidal poisons and infectious pathogens in uncontrolled laboratories at Camp Detrick, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Utah's Dugway Proving Ground, and a Plum Island off New York's Long Island, and at Plum Island off New York's Long Island. As doctors around the world were adopting 20th century medical breakthrough technologies like antibiotics, antivirals, and vaccines, the biowarfare cartel inverted the healing ambitions of medicine and public health by cultivating, engineering, and enhancing mutant strains of pathogenic organisms with amplified lethality, increased virulence, and rapid spread, and with the robust resistance to antibiotics, antivirals, and vaccines. In other words, these death scientists were weaponizing the same pathogens that physicians and public health officials have been trying to eradicate since Hippocrates, while enhancing them with innovative traits to resist treatment. Speaking to Cy Hirsch, author of the 1968 book Chemical and Biological Warfare, America's Hidden Arsenal, a leading government scientist described the perverse research at Fort Detrick as, quote, disease control in reverse, end quote. In 1963, Major General Marshall Stubbs, the chief of the U.S. Chemical Corps, proudly boasted to Congress about the military's expanding arsenal of mutant insects engineered to resist cold weather, drugs, and insecticides. Cy Hirsch described the fierce arms race. Quote, progress in the ability to spread germ agents is being matched only by progress in finding new and virulent strains of germs. Utilizing recent dramatic strides in genetics, scientists are working on techniques that will enable them to breed a variety of resistance factors into a particular bacterial or viral agent. Biological engineering, one scientist called it, which with such techniques, a special breed of pneumonic plague or other diseases could theoretically be developed that no longer would be sensitive to penicillin, streptomycin, and other antibiotics. Research of precisely this nature now is being conducted by about 40 scientists at Detrick. It has been given a top priority by the military. End quote. Hirsch recounts how the Fort Detrick scientists used the new science of synthetic biology and state-of-the-art gain-of-function technologies like radiation and ultraviolet light to accelerate mutation to develop drug-resistant superkillers. These relatively primitive experiments presaged Dr. Fauci's gain-of-function work. Here's another big quote. There are many methods known for altering or transferring resistance or hereditary factors, such as insensitivity to antibiotics, from one bacterium or virus to another. These range from a simple but rare spontaneous resistance that produces a mutant to a complicated genetic interchange known as recombination, which can be made to occur by a variety of methods. The net result of each interchange is the same. Resistance is apparently spread from germ to germ by actual transfer of genetic material, as if genes for drug resistance were being transferred. End quote. With the guidance and materials provided by paperclip Nazis and Ishii's Japanese 731 Brigade veterans, Fort Detrick developed a vast arsenal of weaponized insects as disease vectors. One reporter wrote that by 1959, Detrick's insect inventory included mosquitoes infected with yellow fever, malaria, and dengue, fleas infected with plague, ticks with tularemia, relapsing fever in Colorado fever, houseflies with cholera, anthrax, and dysentery. Chapter 9. Has the United States illegally used bioweapons in war? In 1943, Franklin D. Roosevelt declared the use of biological and chemical weapons has been outlawed by the general opinion of civilized and mankind, and pledged that the United States would never use its B and C weapon arsenal except in retaliation for a chemical or biological attack. Another quote, "This country has not used them, and I hope that we never will be compelled to use them. I state categorically that we shall under no circumstances resort to the use of such weapons unless they are first used by our enemies." End quote. Presidents Truman and Eisenhower were also personally committed to no first use. This statement therefore described official American policy until 1956. The bioweapons entrepreneurs in the Pentagon and the CIA were largely indifferent to such political declarations of national policy and seem to have adopted the more libertine approach known as plausible deniability. This strategy effectively transformed the United States into a rogue nation. In 1952, Russian, Chinese, and Korean leaders accused the United States of adopting Japanese technology to spread entomological weapons and hemorrhagic fever in the Korean War, a criminal violation of the 1925 Geneva Protocol, which the United States had signed but not ratified, and also a violation of the Geneva Conventions, which describe internationally agreed-upon humanitarian rights and protections for non-combatants in wartime. In April 2021, counterpunch article by retired psychologist Jeffrey Kay accused the United States government of covering up the illegal use of biological weapons during the Korean War from 1950 to 1953. In 2010, the CIA declassified hundreds of communications intelligence, or COMINT, which is COMINT, daily reports from the Korean War. These documents vividly portray the reactions and responses of North Korean and Chinese military units responding to biological weapons attack. On May 8, 1951, North Korea's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Park Han-yen, made an accusation to the United Nations Security Council that the United States had attacked the Pyongyang region with weapons carrying the smallpox virus. Park Han-yen said the attacks, which occurred between December 1950 and January 1951, caused some 3,500 cases of smallpox and 350 deaths. Tak March, Chao Enlai, China's Minister for Foreign Affairs, accused the United States of bombing China with a variety of bacteriological weapons. The communist governments charged the United States with dropping germ bombs on North Korea and neighboring regions of China in attacks bracing reminiscent of the earlier attacks of Unit 731. Bracingly reminiscent of the earlier tactics of Unit 731. The evidence included confessions from over 30 captured United States Air Force officers and intelligence agents, many of them subsequently retracted. Testimony by Korean citizens who complained of vast swarms of fleas and other insects following American bombing runs, and photographs purporting to show American germ bombs and the diseased flies they allegedly carried into North Korea. Prior to 1950, hemorrhagic fever was not endemic to Korea, and yet medical authorities reported thousands of cases during the war, not only among Korean communities in the combat zone, but also among U.S. forces. Some 3,000 American soldiers contracted the disease while serving in Korea, and an estimated 10 to 15% died. China and North Korea also accused the United States of bringing key Unit 731 scientists to accompany UN forces in Korea to support the attacks. The United States fiercely denied the charges. An international scientific commission that included scientists from Sweden, France, Italy, Russia, and Brazil, led by the distinguished British scientist Dr. Joseph Needham, who had served formally as counselor to the English embassy in China, concluded, after a long and comprehensive investigation, that the United States had indeed used biological weapons against military and civilian populations. Another large quote. The peoples of Korea and China did actually serve as targets for bacteriological weapons. These weapons were used by detachments of the armed forces of the United States of America, who used for this many and various methods. Some of these are a continuation of methods used by the Japanese Army in the Second World War. End quote. The report of the International Scientific Commission, ISC, detailed 37 incidents in China and 13 in North Korea that were alleged to be biological attacks. The ISC Scientific Committee filed its 669-page report with the United Nations on October 9, 1952. The study details the United States' use of cholera-infected clams, anthrax-infected feathers, plague and yellow fever-carrying lice, fleas, mosquitoes, rodents, rabbits, and other small animals, as well as contaminated toilet paper, envelopes stuffed with lice, and fountain pens filled with germ-laden ink. The study included photographs of bacteria-infected animals used in attacks and American germ bombs. In January 1959, the United States government finally acknowledged it had such bioweapons, but continued to deny using them against North Korea. According to Professor Mark Wheelis, perhaps America's leading bioweapons historian, and here's what he says, if any such trials occurred, they would have been conducted by Special Operations Division, SOD, of the United States Army Biological Laboratory at Camp Dietrich, which collaborated with the CIA to develop biological weapons for sabotage and clandestine use. Most documents describing the projects of the SOD remain classified, and accounts of its activities have been redacted from official histories of the United States bioweapons program. Congressional investigations determined that clandestine bioweapons use could not be excluded because the CIA had destroyed the pertinent records. End quote. North Korea also accused the Navy of deploying its epidemic control ship LCI 1091 to kidnap Korean and Chinese soldiers for bioweapons testing. Professor Wheelis confirms that the Navy ship did indeed kidnap North Korean patients. The Pentagon claims that it conducted the kidnapping mainly to monitor a smallpox epidemic. In the early 1950s, the United States continued to be the leading developer of chemical and biological weapons and the principal opponent of treaties that might interfere with the enterprise. Watching the United States' progress in the bioweapons arms race, Russia launched its own program and would soon overtake us in developing biological weapons of mass destruction. Then in 1956, U.S. military leaders formalized the Sub Rosa policies they had already informally adopted, taking early advantage of the fact that the United States had yet to ratify the Geneva Protocol. The Pentagon and State Department explicitly repudiated FDR's no first strike policy. The military brass unilaterally declared that the United States armed forces were henceforth free to wage chemical and biological warfare on a first strike basis, a capital crime under the Geneva Protocol, which we stubbornly refused to ratify until 1975. The Pentagon, DOD, solidified this policy volte-face at the advice of a civilian advisory committee headed by Otto N. Miller, vice president of the Standard Oil Company of California. Miller dismissed the public's consensus that chemical and biological weaponry were horrifying in character as the quaint and impractical sentiment of a bygone era. We can only speculate to the extent of which self-interest contributed to Miller's convictions. Standard Oil's refineries would provide the lucrative feedstock for chemical weapons manufacturing. Allegations of United States bioweapons use against Cuba, 1962 to 1971. The Cuban government subsequently made credible allegations that the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency initiated bioweapons attacks against the island in both 1962 and 1971. These attacks were separate and distinct from the well-documented poisoning plots by the CIA against Castro masterminded by Sidney Gottlieb. In one such instance, the CIA used two unwitting emissaries, James Donovan and John Nolan, assigned by my uncle, John F. Kennedy, and my father, Robert Kennedy, to negotiate with Castro over the release of the Bay of Pigs prisoners. During the 6 months of continuous negotiations, the two Americans became close to Castro and frequently attended baseball games and other outings with him. Seeing an opportunity to exploit these friendships, the CIA provided an unwitting Donovan and Nolan with a new scuba diving suit as a gift for Castro, without telling them that the agency had coated it internally with a toxic fungus that would produce a disabling and chronic skin disease. Luckily, the plan was stopped, and Castro never received the diving suit. If he had, Nolan told me, our lives would have promptly been forfeit. Both of the CIA's alleged bioweapons attacks on Cuba involved animal pathogens that the U.S. bioweapons program had long been cultivating. Development of Newcastle disease, ND, and African swine fever started first at Fort Detrick and later at the United States Department of Agriculture facility at Plum Island, New York. Cuba charged the CIA with causing a 1962 outbreak of Newcastle disease among fowl in four provinces. The contagion caused the deaths by disease or culling of more than 1 million birds. An unnamed Canadian poultry expert who traveled frequently to Cuba subsequently claimed to Newsday that the United States intelligence agents had paid him $5,000 to infect Cuban turkeys with Newcastle disease virus. He claimed he had accepted the money and viral cultures in May of 1962, but destroyed the weapons before visiting Cuba in June. In January 1962, clandestine officer Brigadier General Edward Lansdale, the CIA spy, who reportedly served as a model for Graham Greene's The Quiet American, tasked the DOD to develop a tactic for incapacitating Cuban sugarcane workers using insect-borne biological agents. The DOD completed the planning process in February, concluding that the proposal was not yet technically feasible. There is no record of any discussion about potential legal, political, moral, or ethical impediments to Lansdale's proposal. In 1971, the United States agencies renewed their biological attacks on Cuban food production by introducing African swine fever, ASF. It was the first appearance of the disease in the Western Hemisphere. The outbreak killed over 445,000 pigs from disease, calling enforced slaughter over a month. And that is the end of chapter 8 and 9. And I just want to reiterate that each chapter is fully sourced with, so that you can go back by each chapter and see where it's all documented with footnotes, is what I want to say. And I'm just looking at the last footnote in chapter 9, and there were 33 footnotes in just that one chapter 9. So you can be sure that you can always find the resource material that he used to write this book. So I just wanted to reiterate that. Next, chapter 10 is Vietnam, and I will be posting that on Wednesday when I get back on track for Wednesdays in Wuhan. Today is Friday, and I got behind, so hopefully my next chapter 10 will be coming out next Wednesday, if not before. I think it seems like Vietnam's a very short chapter, so I will be doing chapters 10 and 11 and probably 12. And 13 even next episode. Thanks for listening.